This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands.
Boker Tov, Anthony Reich, how are you? Anthony Reich, one second. Here we go. By the way, if you want to get in touch with us, you can on 061-895-1019. Anthony Reich, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, Chanukah Sameach, the last day for miracles of Chanukah for this year. I hope it's been good for everybody. A few little snippets before we get into the meat of the stories. Interesting that Al Jazeera has been banned by the Palestinian Authority.
I know.
Now, it was one thing when Al Jazeera was banned by Israel, because, you know, people can kind of understand that Al Jazeera comes from one angle and Israel seems to come from a kind of different angle. And inevitably, the two will clash, even though Israel's laws of media reporting are very, very free. There's obviously freedom of speech and everybody has the right to say with almost whatever they wish. But Israel does have the right also to say whether certain entities are allowed to do their business. And of course, Al Jazeera was presenting a very negative image of Israel during the course of this war. But I think it has a completely different touch and feel about it when the Palestinian Authority is the one that is banning Al Jazeera. And it's interesting to understand what this says about Al Jazeera and their reporting and their angles that they take, the biases that they use. But I think I wanted to just talk more about another story, another just snippet that I wanted to add in. And there's a headline in one of the Israeli newspapers this morning that talks about the IDF being accused of striking against humanitarian zones in Gaza, and a related story, which I found very, very interesting, about the military advocate general, who is Major General Ifat Tomer Yerushalmi. She wrote a letter to the head of the Southern Command saying that she believes that the army hasn't adequately assessed the size of the civilian population in areas where it is operating throughout Gaza. And as a result of that, she feels that the army is not taking sufficient care to safeguard the safety of the civilians in the areas where the IDF is operating. And she goes on to say that she feels that as a result of this underassessment of the civilian population, that there is also not sufficient humanitarian aid being provided to those areas. That's quite a serious allegation to be made internally by the military advocate general. The story doesn't end there, because this letter was then handed to the IDF Chief of General Staff Herzi Halevi. He ordered an internal investigation into this matter after he received the letter. The internal investigation has found that IDF strikes did not end up leading to an excess in civilian casualties, and indeed that in terms of this internal probe, that enough aid has actually entered particularly the area of Beit Lahia, but in general to those areas where humanitarian aid is required. And even though this internal investigation resulted in those findings, the Chief of General Staff has ordered an external panel to have a look at this, effectively recognizing that the military advocate general may have a point, and not to allow the matter just to rest right there, but to take a step further and to look at it using an external panel. Now, what I'd like to say about this is that on the face of things, the letter by the military advocate general kind of seems contrary to what we have understood about what the IDF has been doing up until now, and seems to be somewhat critical, a little worrying even, about the way in which the IDF is operating. I see things entirely differently. And I see things in terms of this being such a high priority issue in the IDF that the military advocate general has taken it upon herself to investigate this in some depth and to write to the Chief of General Staff, who then has taken the letter and has ordered an internal investigation and an external investigation. So what we have to understand, I think, what I understand from all of this, is that no army is perfect, and that no army can do exactly what is required all the time in order to protect civilians. But this issue is so important at the level of the Chief of General Staff and at the level of the Military Advocate General that it is being investigated while wars are being raged and while attacks are being made against Israel on every border. This is such an important issue that it's really up there at the top of the agenda and it's being investigated thoroughly. So I take a lot of comfort from that. And I think that this does support the statements that are being made by the IDF, which says we do take care of civilians, we do care about civilians, we do attempt to avoid civilian casualties wherever possible. And if the Military Advocate General thinks that we are not doing a good enough job, we're going to check it out.
You know what amazes me is that anybody can make any allegation, even if they know that it's unfounded, and the burden of proof is on Israel to prove that it is not so. And it can be exhausting. I actually don't know how Israel manages. I'm exhausted by it. What about you, Anthony?
It can be exhausting, but I think we also learn to filter out what is real and what is not real, what is simply an attack against us. I mean, some of the allegations and the statements that get made are so ridiculous and are so far-fetched that you don't even really need to respond to them.
Yeah, they are far-fetched by us. But, you know, Israel and the Jews is whatever you want it to be. People are prepared to believe absolutely anything about us, Anthony. Anything. You know,
and they do.
And they do, exactly. I mean, the very thing that we're not allowed to do as an example, I mean, we're not allowed to have blood in any form, even if it's in an egg, right? An egg, we check our eggs. You can't even have a blood spot on an egg yolk, right? What are we accused of? Killing babies for their blood. So
yeah,
people will believe
anything
about us. And we do have to defend. I hear it.
I think it's been free season over the last 15 to 18 months in terms of allowing people the freedom to just vent all their pent-up frustrations and hatreds and all the things that they've believed and wanted to say over the years. But when it has been unacceptable, not politically accepted or otherwise, in order to make these allegations public. And now in the context of the war and with the background of the huge rise in anti-Semitism, I think that this has given free rein, a free opportunity for all of those with these views which are long held, but not necessarily cultivated from this year or last year or even the last 5 years. These are views that are deep-seated, that are passed down from generation to generation, sure, that people believe without necessarily having any foundation. But of course, the moment a war breaks out, all of those deep-felt hatreds are suddenly actualized or suddenly justified. And they feel that they then have the right and the ability and the stage and potentially people listening to make these views felt. We know what that means. We know what it's all about. I think that the Israeli government has been forced to take this on board and to respond to it. I know that Israel has been accused of having very, very poor PR. But I think some of that is down to the fact that we can't simply respond to every ridiculous allegation. And the problem is that people are so uneducated. When you look, for example, just at the Ivy League campuses, where this is supposed to be a certain bastion of academic excellence, people who are smart and who are educated and who know their way around, and yet the lack of a knowledge and the simple ridiculosity that is that a word that is used to make statements which are so far from the truth just doesn't match with the standing that these institutions really should have, with the academic excellence, with the ability to research before you make statements, with the expectation that you will make your proper research before you make allegations. And people are just making the most ridiculous comments, and it's really impossible to counter that. And so therefore it stands to people like us, everyday citizens, to educate ourselves and to be able to counter those ridiculous allegations with the realities of what's happening on the ground. I've said this before and I'll say it again. The real problem is that those people who want to believe already believe, and those people who don't want to believe will probably never believe. And so to some degree, this is kind of a futile battle.
Yeah. Anthony, there was a story coming out that said Hezbollah Secretary General says Israel is violating the agreement. We are being patient. Naeem Qassem claimed that Israel has committed over 100 violations of the ceasefire deal. So can we talk about the ceasefire deal? What is the status of it? Is it still holding?
Yeah.
Between Israel and Hezbollah?
I think it's called a ceasefire, but really it's a truce more than a ceasefire, because I think the nature of a ceasefire is longer term. And when you say truce, it sounds sort of shorter term. And I think the intention was for it to be a truce, at least in the initial stages, and potentially lead to a longer term ceasefire in the event that it holds out. But just to remind listeners, on the 27th of November, this truce agreement was signed. Israel and Lebanon / Hezbollah agreed to a cessation of hostilities. There were five mediating countries that were led mostly by the United States and France, who were involved in facilitating this. And this five-country group was supposed to be a monitoring panel to oversee the terms of the truce. And UNIFIL, which is the United Nations force in Lebanon, was all supposed to be involved in overseeing this truce. And the terms of the truce were quite simple, that that Hezbollah would withdraw to north of the Litani River, and that the southern Lebanon area that became vacated would be occupied by Lebanese army soldiers, approximately 5,000 of them. And on the Israeli side, there would be a 60-day period within which Israel would withdraw all of its forces from Lebanese territory. We haven't quite reached the end of the 60-day period. And of course, during that time, during this truce period, the idea is that Hezbollah would not fire missiles into Israel, and that Israel would not continue its military operations against Hezbollah and other Lebanese factions in Lebanon. Now, it's true that the Hezbollah rockets have ceased since the truce began. There were a few rockets that were fired in the initial days, but since then, really nothing much to speak of. Israel has indeed withdrawn gradually its troops from Lebanon, but it still does have troops that are operating in Lebanon. What's the problem? The problem is that Hezbollah was supposed to withdraw all of its forces from southern Lebanon. This is something which hasn't really happened in the way that was expected. Also, the Lebanese army doesn't really have the resources and the ability to fill that vacuum as was anticipated. So when this was agreed up front, there wasn't a proper investigation to see whether, in fact, the commitments that were agreed upon in the name of the Lebanese army were actually feasible, whether they could actually do that. In reality, the Lebanese army is a relatively weak organization, and there is much doubt about whether they're able to actually fulfill the role of policing that southern Lebanon area, and in particular getting rid of Hezbollah operatives. Now, Israel, of course, has been accused of carrying out operations in southern Lebanon in spite of the truce. And indeed, Israel has been involved in carrying out operations in southern Lebanon in spite of the truce. Those operations have been very, very limited. Many of them have been directed towards infrastructure, weapon storage facilities, tunnels, items, infrastructure that represents a threat to Israel. Israel has also carried out activities against Hezbollah operatives who are in southern Lebanon in violation of the truce agreement. So one could argue that, in fact, the violation is on the part of Hezbollah in that particular case, that Israel has every justification to respond to that violation in the way that they see fit, because there is already a lack of adherence to the terms of the truce. So when the Hezbollah Secretary General stands up and accuses Israel of violating the truce agreement, on the face of things, it might look like that's true. However, he forgets to mention the extent to which his Hezbollah operatives, terrorists, are violating the truce by being present in the area south of the Litani River where they're not supposed to be. So overall, I think the truce has worked quite well. It is still holding. There are threats that once the 60-day period is up, when the Israeli army is due to have been withdrawn entirely from southern Lebanon, then things will change. The Lebanese, some Hezbollah people are saying, you know, that there is going to be a lot more activity against the IDF, if they are found still to be in Lebanon after the 60 days, let's get there and let's decide. We're not quite there yet. It's still another month or so, a little less, about 3 weeks until we get there. So we will find out in due course. But for now, at least, I think the truce is working for us. And I think, to be honest, that the truce is working for them, because I think Hezbollah and the Lebanese have been able to rest a little bit. Many of the civilians have returned to southern Lebanon, maybe not quite as many as they had anticipated. But I think that overall, I would say that the truce is holding, with a few violations here and there, but the IDF knows how to deal with that.
Anthony Reich, that is where we leave it. And for the second time this week, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom. Thank you for just for coming on this morning and having these conversations.
I definitely will not be talking to you tomorrow. So I do wish you a good weekend and a Shabbat Shalom, a Chanukah Sameach. And
you,
I look
Anthony.
Forward to picking up again next week.
Thank
as
you
usual.
So much. God bless. And thank you. That is Anthony Reich and the Israel Report.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.